In most cases, it's because we are in a battle, a war with our kids, and we don't even realize it. We still love them. We still care about them, but we are simultaneously at war with them. Are you in the middle of a battle with your kid? Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network, here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent, there is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is March the 18th, 2015. It is middle of the week, Wednesday. Our topic for today is the question, or are you at war with your kids? You know, I get so many people that come to me, and I absolutely hate giving parental advice to people, because I'll get people, Trey, I've got this problem with my kid. What should I do? And I do not enjoy answering that question. I will, in most all cases. I'll throw out there what we would do as a family. The real answer that I can answer, the real question that I can answer is the question, Trey, what would you do if you were in this problem? And that's where the delineation occurs. But a lot of parents walk into this and they come out and they really try the things that I give them to try, and it doesn't work. And they say, Trey, what's the deal? Is there something wrong with me? Is actually most cases they go ahead and hardcore blame the kids. Well, it's because my kid is a, you know, fill in the blank. And because of that, gets so frustrated. And so the answer actually lies in kind of a deeper level that we're going to go to. This is actually originally a Family Podcast Network classic remix of a show that I've just gotten enough questions lately that it's time to revisit this. We did this back in July of 2013. It is one of the top five most recommended shows that you can listen to at the Family Podcast Network. And so it's an episode that we have to cover because it is the very bedrock, the foundation of every single freaking else thing that we talk about at this show. And so it has to be covered. And I'll even go as far to say, as a matter of fact, if you actually go to thefamilypodcast.com, click on the new to FPN and click and then go to click here to start, I've actually created a page that has the top four episodes that if you want to listen to the show, especially if you're a brand new listener just coming in, maybe this is your first one, maybe you've been listening to three or four or five of these and you like what you're hearing, you need to go to the click here to start page. And there are four shows, and they are back-to-back shows that feed off of each other. The first one is Are You at War with Your Kids? While we've got to stop seeing kids as inferior. The Heart of War, we create our own problems and conflict and then silence the cannons, unlearning the Heart of War. It is the series that is the most integral and important to this, because most every single parent, and yes, probably you too, walk into their relationships with their kids practicing this Heart of War mentality. And they come in and they cannot figure out why they can't get success, when the reality is they are fighting their kid is fighting back. And it is burning relationship and not getting them anywhere that they want to be. So I highly recommend that you do that. We're actually, I'm doing this as kind of a way to re-spark these four. Because if you're a longtime listener, if you're a P-tacker and a longtime listener, and you haven't gone to listen to these four shows, you need to do it pronto. We're talking now. And I'm saying that because the stuff that's in this is so good, so heavy, and so crucial. You cannot miss this stuff. Effectively, you've got to get in there and you've got to check this out. So make sure that you take the opportunity to go to the click here to start page and listen to those four shows in a row. It's 231, 232, 233, and 238. And go in there and listen to those, because they are revolutionary, they are groundbreaking. And then share the crap out of them, guys, because I'm telling you, this is the stuff here that makes magic, that changes families' lives and potentially can change your life. So go over there. So we're going to talk a little bit about this mentality of, are you at war with your kid? Now, why did I put that into a question? The answer is probably yes, you are. In some capacity, in some way, Trey, I love my kid. We have a great relationship. That may be But a lot of this actually came up because I've gotten a lot of families asking me, Trey, would you do a show on eating issues? And the answer is yes. I'm working on putting together a great show on eating issues. But the reality is that most of them, when you really boil down the problems that families are having with their kids in regards to getting them to eat or not eat, most of them is just power struggle. It's a war that they're having with their kids, and they can't figure out how to get the issue solved. So we are going to go ahead and jump into that article. I'm going to do a super fast housekeeping real quick. If you want to stay notified of the new episodes, guys, don't forget to go to thehearmepodcast.com. Right-hand side, name and email address, commit, submit, and boom! It does say that on the bar. Once you do that, you will get notified of all new shows that come out completely for free. Guys, also don't forget you can support the show 30 cents per episode. If you have any questions, comments, thoughts, or a topic that you want to share with us, you can give us a holler, give us a call, 661-PARENT-0, and let us drop us your message. Again, the number is 661-PARENT-0. You can also go to the Contact Us page and leave a message right over your computer, your iPhone, your iPad, whatever you got with you. And then last, guys, you can always email your articles to me that you want to get covered to TreyGibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. Shoot me what you got. We love your stuff. We want to cover it. So, all right, guys, we're going to go ahead and cue up an old show. Again, this is episode number 231, Are You at War with Your Kids? Probably one of the more important shows you're ever going to listen to. If you're an active listener to this show, you need to listen to this one today or have heard this one, because it sets the precedence. I'm hoping that this will facilitate you guys going to that Where to Start page and taking that time to go peruse those four shows and listen to them. So anyway, without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and take it back. Are You at War with Your Kids? Going back to this idea of seeing, you know, being at war with our kids, you know, most parents, whenever they come to me, here's what they want. They want a change in their kids' behavior, right? They want the discipline technique, right, that changes them. Can I just do this? Or if I stick them in the corner, or if I stop spanking them, or if I start spanking them and really whooping them good, what is it that's going to change my kid? A lot of parents, when they come to me, and myself included, guys, I understand, but you know, they want this way of talking kinder to their kid to change. Oh, if I could just learn how to talk kinder to my kid, then it'll be better, and I'll work all this out. If I can just learn to be nicer, right? It's kind of the mentality that seems to come up. Then I'll be better at this, right? But the reality is that any of these requests, what does it all come back to? It comes back to technique. They want a different technique, a different way of doing something. It'll work better. It's the thought process, the mentality that if I can just learn how to do this, whatever technique it is, count to 10 or stick them in a corner or whatever else, then I'll be successful. And sometimes being fair, sometimes that's an accurate statement. Sometimes parents have got it nailed. And they sit down and they just need little small things tweaked for them. And then they're back in the saddle. And they're excellent. But I'm sorry, guys. I'm having to drink my hot tea as usual. But sometimes, no, I'm going to go as far as to say often, there is a much deeper issue that is going on between the parent and the kids that has nothing to do with techniques. You see, most are working and spending time on things and how they're going wrong. When they work with their kid, when they talk with their kid, when they interact with their kid, they're focusing their attention on them when things are going wrong and not helping things go right. I want you to imagine a triangle, right? Kind of like the food pyramid, right? And I want you to imagine this triangle right at the very tippy top. There's just a small spot that has been cut off, right? That's where our fats and sugars would go on our food pyramid, right? So I want you to imagine looking at that. And up there at the very top, in that little small, tiny triangle at the very top, we're going to label that right. This is where we're focusing on our kid when they're doing it right. And then the rest of that triangle out there, excluding that very tip top up there, is how much attention we're giving them when we're doing it wrong. This is how parents spend the majority of their time when they're working with their kids. They're spending so little time on what they're doing right and so much time on what they are doing wrong. So the question that we're going to answer today is, why is that? Why do parents insist often, subconsciously, I'll admit, but they insist on focusing on what their kid is doing wrong instead of helping them focus on things that are going right? What's the reason behind that? Instead, we're going to talk over the, I think this is going to have to be a two-parter, guys. I'm going to do part of it today and kind of the groundwork, and then tomorrow we're really going to jump in and bite down the butt of this thing. But how do we shift it to where we spend only that top tiny triangle piece focused on when they're getting wrong and spend more time focused on when they're getting it right? So remember, today we're talking about our goal being to help kids get things going right. But if we're stuck in this cycle of not helping kids going right, and I'm talking, guys, you need to be, for every one thing that you criticize them on, there need to be 10 things that you have built them up and told them good job on. Oh, Trey, is that really necessary? Yes, yes, it is. I'm not going to go into why it's necessary. We have other shows out there that are better suited for explaining that. But is it necessary for us to spend that much time telling our kids what they're doing right versus when they're doing things wrong? The answer is most definitely yes. So how? How do we do that? Whether I've got you sold on that or not, I bet I can get anybody sold on the fact that this is beneficial, right? So how do we do that? What we're talking about today is the way you see your kid. It's your filter, if you will. It's the very thing that helps you determine in your heart of hearts whether or not you're at war or at peace with your kid. Where does it all begin? Does it begin with techniques? Does it begin with behaviors or clever ideas? Does it begin with medication for your kid? In most all cases, it begins with your heart, with the parent's heart. Now, I know, I know, all of this sounds like some mushy hippie crap or something. I don't know. But I want you guys to bear with me today. So my question for you today to start out this show, do you have a heart of war or a heart of peace? Some of you guys may be like, okay, Trey, what does warfare have anything to do with my kids? The answer is everything. You know, to understand this heart of peace that we're talking about, I love to go back to a historical figure, a historical recounting of a guy named Saladin and why his reign was so effective. This is a true story, guys. This is real history. But before we can do that, I'm going to give you just kind of a real quick history lesson. We're going to talk a little bit about Jerusalem and some of the fighting between Christian and Muslim. Now, first off, I want to be very clear here. I do know that we have listeners from some of the different countries that are Muslim-based, and I have to assume that y'all are. I want to make sure that on the Christian and the Muslim side, we're extremely clear here. Listen to me very succinctly. This is not about who's right and who's wrong in any of these conflicts that we're about to talk about. It is purely to talk about this particular guy named Saladin, okay? So focus with me here. This is not intended to be some kind of rivalry crap. Got me? So to get into this, we got to start talking about Jerusalem. For the most part, from what I can read in history, up until about 70 AD, the Jews owned, operate, ran, and did everything with Jerusalem. They established it, they built it, they ran it, it was all of theirs until about 70 AD whenever Rome sacked it, okay? After that, right around that same exact time, guess who popped up historically? Whether you believe in him as being a supreme being or whatever else, I mean, we all acknowledge that there was a man named Jesus Christ. There in Jesus Christ, right, is whenever Christianity began to spread. Christianity spread so much that eventually it became the Roman religion, number one, and it spread across all of Rome and became the dominant religion there, right? So, 638, Muslims came back and recaptured Jerusalem again and took it back, and of course, you can imagine they reestablished the Muslim rule. Well, about 1099 is whenever the Crusaders came back in. This is whenever you hear about the Great Crusades, and if you look around, you'll see a lot of our military are now carrying, like, you know, they're calling themselves Crusaders again, and I'll raid your jihad for one crusade, blah, blah, blah. All of it is going back to, you know, when the Crusades took place, and they came in around 1099 and retook Jerusalem. Now, when the Crusaders came in there, they broke down the wall in one of the most vulnerable spots of Jerusalem. They broke down the wall. They flooded in. They began killing every Muslim they could find. They began killing every Jew that they could find. Now, mind you, there weren't very many Jews still in Jerusalem at the time of this Muslim reign. that started in 638, but the reality was there was still some there. But there was very little regard for the fact that they were Jews anyway, and the Crusaders came in and slaughtered them. There were recounts of them running Muslims into buildings, into the church buildings, and setting them on fire. I mean, they did atrocious things. Absolutely atrocious things, even to the point that the Crusaders actually took the Christian leaders, the Christian leaders. So mind you that the Crusaders were Christians themselves. They took their own Christian leaders in Jerusalem and tortured them and killed them because there was like threat. There was like accusations of collusion, of working with the enemy, or at least not violently opposing them in the city. So fighting from this point on just kind of ensued. From this point on, it went back and forth so much, and it was contested. Jerusalem was contested so much that there's very little solid evidence as to who owned what at what time, because they would be dual occupied, and both of them would be sitting there referring to the other one as the invader and as the occupier. So really during a lot of this time right here, after 1099, they're just, it's hard to determine who it belonged to. But during this time, guys, I've read some of the stories, and I've read some of the allegoricals and some of the documents and recounting about what was happening. Let me tell you, both sides of this, the Christians and the Muslims, did some nasty things. I mean, things that I won't even repeat. I mean, I consider myself I enjoy studying warfare and tactics, and I enjoy war movies, etc. Let me tell you, both sides did things that are inappropriate to even speak. Especially knowing there's likely some little ears listening. But the reality is, both sides did things they should never have done. We talked about in 1099, as we mentioned this earlier, Christians had actually held Jerusalem, but they only held it for a very, very short time. Now, a lot of the reasons they were even able, it was very unstable during this time of the Crusader rule, if you will. It wasn't a solidly sustaining rule, but they were holding it. And most of the reasons why they were holding it is because the Muslim leaders at that time fought amongst themselves, and they bickered. And so that there was a disjointedness within the Muslim regime that did not allow them to be able to even mount an attack back on, Jerusalem and retake it. It couldn't have happened. But interestingly enough, in 1187, Jerusalem was finally recaptured with what I would argue, I think it's arguable, was the most successful military campaign that I've read about, at least in this whole conflict between the Crusaders and the Muslims, the Christians and the Muslims, right? I would actually argue it was the most successful campaign, and it was done. And I'm not entirely for sure I'm going to nail his name perfectly. I can get the Western version of it, but trying to get his original Muslim name was difficult. But his name was Yusuf Salah al-Din, or we commonly refer to him as Saladin. Now, if you ever get the opportunity, go Google Saladin. Go Google his legacy. Go look at some of his legacy, the things that he left behind. And I don't care whether you're a Muslim or a Christian, you can come to appreciate this guy. But even in the Western world, Europe, Australia, even all the way to the Americas, there is tons of documentation about this man named Saladin, who is not like anybody else during this conflict. I mean, you could argue that militarily, politically, everything that Saladin did was incredible. Interestingly enough, some of the documents that I read on, he was actually referred to as a chivalrous knight, even amongst the Christians. Now, I'm not talking about the Christians that I've met him before. I'm talking about the Christians that were fighting against him, referred to him as a chivalrous knight. Now, you got to understand the level of, I'm going to call it pseudo-blasphemy in this, for a Christian to refer to a Muslim as a chivalrous knight. That is no small thing. This conflict that we even have to this very day between Muslims and Christianity is no new thing. It's been around as long as any of us have been alive, and way, way, way longer. But the idea of calling them something like that is a huge, huge deal. You see, Saladin did things like he would grant amnesty to the Christians after he sacked Jerusalem and took it over. He actually would let the Christians and the Jews that were there go. He would grant them amnesty. Even if they were war, even if they were warriors, even if they were fighters in the war that had killed his own men, he gave them amnesty. Even despite the previous slaughter, I mean, not that much earlier, guys. 1099 is whenever the Christians came in. Crusaders took over. 1187, guys. That ain't that much further. Or that much longer, maybe I should say. So even despite the Crusaders who came in and slaughtered and killed people and burnt them alive in their buildings, Saladin still came and granted amnesty. Even Lord Richard actually wrote a quote about him being a great prince, and I quote, "the greatest, most powerful leader of the Muslims." That's a big deal for anybody to say. I mean, that would be like President George W. Bush getting up there and complimenting. First off, any of you guys, for all the Muslim listeners, I'm not about to compare you to this. What I'm comparing it to is what it would be like if George W. Bush got up there and called, oh, I don't know, Osama bin Laden a great man, a great prince. I mean, it would be the equivalent. You'd go, what? What's that you say? That's just how odd it would be to even hear this. And yet, Richard the Lionheart calls him one of the greatest and most powerful leaders. There was once I think it was a Frankish mom. This was an enemy of the Muslims at the time, of Saladin at the time. A mother came up to him after his army was coming through, and some Muslim raiders had actually come and taken her baby and taken him down to slavery. So the enemy of Saladin, she came up to his camp, she threw hysterical fits until she finally was able to see Saladin, and they took him into Saladin, and she explained the situation of him getting stolen. Saladin took his own money and had him go down there to the market and had them buy her baby for her, gave it back to her, and then gave her an entourage to get her back to her camp. The enemy camp, guys. I mean, wow. Whenever Saladin broke through the wall, almost in the exact same place that the Crusaders broke through the wall, it's a very weak spot tactically in Jerusalem. So he went to the same exact spot, and he broke the wall down, and as they flooded through, one of the things that he ordered primarily his men to do was that they were not allowed to plunder any of the Christian places of worship. They were not allowed to plunder any of the Christian homes, which, I mean, seriously, who does that? Even that, he also ordered extra guards to stand watch at the Christian places of worship, just so that way people wouldn't sneak in at night and plunder it or do it during the middle of the day blatantly without permission. It's actually kind of interesting. He set up what was called a ransom. And in this ransom, what he would do was basically he would charge fees for people getting to leave. He had to replace his treasury. War takes a lot of money. We all know that. And so he spent all this money on this, so he had to replace the treasury. And one of the things that he did was, for the ransom, is that people were allowed to ransom themselves and get out just by paying a very small fee. In other words, he didn't steal their stuff and then said, but if you want to pay, and it was very low, he said, but if you want to pay me a very low ransom, I'll let you go. I mean, well, he was criticized very heavily by his cabinet for not charging more, for not requiring more, at least for the wealthy people. But he's mentioned on several occasions of saying he was very concerned for the poor in Jerusalem because they wouldn't have anything left to be able to barter with. It's interesting. Saladin even allowed the Christian leader at the time, one of the Christian leaders at least at the time, Balian of Ibelin was one of the main leaders there, and he fled whenever Saladin got in. Well, his wife didn't make it out. So he sent a message saying, "May I come get my wife?" Saladin said, no problem. Balan came and got his wife and then said, hey, listen, can we leave? And he said, yeah. And he gave him an entourage to get him out. As he was getting ready to leave, Balan actually came back to him and said, I actually don't want to leave. There's nobody here to organize a resistance. I'd like to stay and organize a resistance. So many of you guys might be like, oh, well, no, he didn't do that. Yes, he did. He gave his wife free rein to go. Gave him a pretty nice little wealthy sum of money from the treasury, and then gave him permission to stay and lead a rebellion. I mean, some of you guys out there, especially you men that listen, may be thinking, what a chump. What a tactically stupid man. I don't know what you're thinking. But what if I suggested to you that he wasn't at all? Because here's what the questions come down to. What was the difference between the Crusaders, the Christians, and Saladin? Some would say that the Crusaders were barbaric. That they came in and they killed wantonly. No regard for life. They saw people as not people. And yet Saladin, he was actually concerned about those, even those he was defeating, that he was more powerful than. You could say that the Crusaders looked at people as though they didn't matter. You know, to them, they were a religion. They were Muslims, not people. To them, they were a religion. They're Muslims, not Crusaders like us. You see, the Crusaders looked at the people of Jerusalem when they came in 1099 as objects to be driven out. But you see, Saladin did something hugely different than what most of us think that we're capable of doing. You see, he honored humanity even when it was different. So some of you guys may be like, Trey, okay, buddy, I got you there, but what does this have anything to do with our kids? Listen to me so very carefully. How we regard, how we filter, how we see our kids is the difference. It is how we see our kids, where we make that choice to either be like the Crusaders or like Saladin. It is in that minute where we choose to see our kids differently, where we're able to see them as either people or as problems, where we're able to see them as humans or just objects. It's very obvious that the Crusaders had a heart of war. They saw people as less than people. They were inferior to them because they were not Crusaders. They saw human life as not important because whatever reasons, but the reasons of most wars are, you've killed my brother, you've killed my sisters, you've killed this, you've taken that from me, you killed my brother in arms. And because of that, you don't count anymore. So they became barbaric. They stopped caring, and their hearts were at war. And you know, I think this is more common. This heart of war is more common than we care to see. Just a good example, my neighbor friend just this week got attacked by a dog. And my neighbor friend, which I feel was completely justified in self-defense, had to pull a firearm and shoot the dog because it was coming at him aggressively and barking at him. And it took off after him. And he shot this dog. And it was the dog of our neighbors down the road. And I caught myself, this neighbor began making up blatant lies. I mean, just blatant lies. None of the evidence supported anything that she was saying. And I caught myself wanting to become belligerent with her. I started feeling my heart harden towards her. You see, I began to try to see her as an object, as a stupid lady who let her dog out, who's been letting him out for forever, who scared me and my kids as well, who doesn't seem to have any responsibility over the animals that she has. You see, I began to see her not as a person, but rather as an object. And the reality, the fact is that whenever you see someone, anything, whether it's your neighbor, whether it's your wife, or whether it's your dadgum kids, when you see them as less than a person, even when you're not intending to see them as less than a person, you treat them differently. You treat them as an object. Here at my work, my day job, we had a lady at work who we've been having a really hard time with. She has been difficult to get along with. She has specifically targeted me in a couple of situations with things that are very unfair. And I'm not the only one. She's done that with several people. And several people have taken it to HR. And the reality comes down to is that I catch myself so desperately wanting to see her as a problem, as a turd, as a bully, instead of wanting to see her as a human. Even just today, my son Grant wanted to play Halo with Daddy so bad. Dad, you want to play Halo? And I knew in the deep down inside, I knew the right answer was yes, son. I've got enough time to sit down and play some Xbox with you. But I said no. You see, I betrayed myself. I betrayed what deep down I knew it in my nuggets that it was the right thing to do. And I avoided it. I faked my answer. And then I began running to justification. Oh, I've got to get started on the session notes for tonight so I'm not up late. And, you know, I've got to get this done. I've got to respond to that Facebook post. And you see, I betrayed myself. I betrayed what that heart of hearts was telling me to do. You see, I had a heart of war with my kid. Was I ready to go out there and melee attack him with a rifle? No. But does that mean that my heart wasn't at war? I argue that no, of course it was. And I want to end on this today. I want to be very clear. Muslims, Christians, Jews, whatever. There are those who make decisions and have a heart of war. And every country, every faith, every family, every job, there will always be people that have hearts of war. So this is not intended to be discriminatory one little bit. But today is to get you thinking. What can you change in you? Where have you been at war in your heart with your kid? Where have you betrayed what you know is the right thing to do? That little part of you that said you should not yell at your kid. There's got to be a better way. When did you defy what that very, very inner core thing was telling you? When did you deceive yourself? When did you do it with a neighbor? When did you do it with a coworker? When did you do it with your kid? Well, guys, that's all that we have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network. Help when you work with your tough kids. Or maybe I should say help when you work to be not a tough parent. I don't know. We'll have to put some thought into that. Guys, I hope you enjoyed the episode today. Guys, really chew on this week. Where have you had a heart of war with your kid? Where do you need to change? Where do you need to stop betraying yourself? I want you guys to chew on that this week. You guys have a good one, if nothing else. You got to come join us back for this Wednesday. We're going to go through part two of being at war with your kid and how to get out of that war. We're going to talk a little bit about the heart of peace. This week was talking about defining the war and acknowledging and admitting to ourselves that we're there. Next week's going to be about how the crap do we stop having a heart of war with our kid. It is possible. You can do it. I don't care how tough you think your kid is. It can be done. Hope you guys have a great day. Great next couple of days. Don't forget, it's all about the relationships with your kids.